This netcast is brought to you by the 8 Days of Geek Network.
All of your ears are belong to us.
On this episode of Error Code 8, we cover CES news, the Acer A700 is official, Sprint's new LTE devices, Nikon's new camera, a laptop called the Yoga, and the Nokia Lumina 900. Stay tuned. You're listening to Error Code 8. This is episode 2. I'm joining you again. My name is Jesse Miller, if you forgot from the last episode. And joining me once again in the hot seat, Sam Briggs.
Hello, everyone.
We are hot on the heels of CES news this week. CES is just winding up. We're doing this recording on Monday night. CES, I believe, starts tomorrow. Are you excited, Sam?
Very excited. Geeks. I'm very sad that I'm stuck working every day this week.
Yeah, that kind of sucks. But hey, at least you can access it on your phone.
Oh, yeah.
Geeks are always excited around CES time. That's when the best gadgets get shown off. That, you know, basically tells us what we're going to be spending our money on for the next year. Let's see. I've got a couple interesting little nuggets that have come out before CES that I'd like to cover. We recently talked, I believe it was, I think it was on our 8-Bits podcast, which is our gaming podcast. Brandon and I talked about people who were unable to get broadband internet at their homes because of where they live. Now, broadband internet, it's a tricky beast because your next-door neighbor could have it and you might not be able to get it. So it's weird like that. For people who are unable to get things like cable internet, DSL, you know, things like that, Fios, there is one other alternative. This one pretty much works everywhere, and this is satellite internet. Up until recently, satellite is ungodly slow. I mean, stupid slow. And ridiculously expensive to boot. So it was kind of, you know, like getting poked in the eye with a sharp stick. Now, there is a company called Viasat that recently released their newest product. They're going to be starting to offer home broadband service, so that's residential, via satellite. And get this speed. This speed actually blew me away. I had to read it twice to make sure I was reading this correctly. It's going to be 12 megabits per second plus download speeds. So that's like that's about a middle-range cable connection. And upload speeds of 3 megabits per second or more.
And for those of you wondering, AT&T's landline service, their broadband service, doesn't even come close to this.
No, their top-tier system right now for residential has actually gone down a little bit from days past. It is at 3 megabits per second download speeds, which is really where it counts the most. And then their upload speed, I think, is like 700 kilobits, something like that. It's nowhere near this. I mean, this is outrageous. Now, you hear this, and you hear satellite, and, you know, a $500 installation fee, and, you know, $100 a month. No, that's not how this works. They've actually said the installation fee would be somewhere around $100, give or take, but the monthly is what caught me off guard. $50 a month for this. That is really, truly not bad.
No, that is a almost half the price of what certain other satellite companies have been offering.
Exactly. So up until this time, all these satellite companies that offer broadband internet have been charging an arm and a leg to install it, arm and a leg to operate it, and sometimes they give you good speed, sometimes they don't. This one, it looks like it's really going to be a very promising system. Like I said, 12 megabits per second down, 3 megabits per second up. I mean, that's pretty impressive. That is for a satellite connection.
Now, The only drawback to it is that there is still about half a second of latency, about 600 milliseconds. And that means for those of you out there who are wanting to do gaming or video chatting, it'll be usable. It won't be the best in the world, but it's not dial-up, and it's not any of the other satellite services, which some of those clock in at nearly, you know, a little over a full second of latency, which is just unbearable.
Exactly. I mean, you are shooting and receiving a signal from space, so you're going to have a little bit of latency. It's going to happen. But this is definitely the lowest latency of all of them. So, yeah, check that out. If you, if you're unable to get broadband any other way, Viasat is the company. We have a link to one of the articles on Engadget. It's where you can see what they actually run through Viasat's presentation, so you can see it actually in action. All right, next thing. Last episode, we talked about some leaks of the Acer Iconia A700 tablet. It's the Android tablet. Well, it is no longer a leak. The A700 is official. It's been released for CES. Pretty much everything we guessed was on it is actually on it. It's Tegra 3 powered. That's a 1.3 gigahertz quad-core processor with an integrated GPU for really good gaming and display performance. A gig of RAM. You got a customized version of Ice Cream Sandwich. It's a 10.1-inch display operating at 1080p. So, I mean, that's a movie-watching machine right there. It's HDMI port, micro SD card, micro USB. It's basic slots. It's basic performance for this next generation of tablets. I have a feeling now that the Tegra 3 is coming out for Ice Cream Sandwich, everybody's going to put that in there, and it's going to be, it's going to be the new gold standard. However, it's still a new Android tablet, and it still looks very interesting to me. It's a beautiful piece of hardware. It truly is. What do you, have you looked at this yet, Sam?
Oh, yeah. This is actually one I managed to follow today at work.
What do you think about it?
Again, like I said last time, it is the top of the line. If you really want to do tablet gaming and you want to be the best tablet gamer in the world, you have to pick up one of these devices. There's simply not going to be anything out. No one's announced anything close to it yet. This is definitely the way to go. In regards to everything else, I know this is their media tablet and not their business tablet, but I kind of wish they had included a USB port on there, a full-size USB port. The functionality that you lose by not having that is a lot, but this is, again, obviously just a media tablet, and it's going to be the best one on the market for a while.
All right. Next thing, a tablet that isn't so off the charts. This one is, you remember a long time ago, way back in the days of tech, there was a company that sought out to make a $100 desk or laptop computer that you could, that they could give to children in third world countries and less privileged children and stuff like that, to where they would be able to access the internet. It was called One Laptop Per Child, or OLPC. Now, the laptop didn't really pan out. I mean, they made a whole bunch of them. They sold some of them, donated a whole bunch. But it just didn't – it never caught on, you know. Well, they have released a tablet now, since tablets are the great thing. Technically, if you think about it, a tablet's actually probably cheaper to make – because of the lack of a keyboard and a hinge and all these different components, much less of a battery needed, that kind of stuff. It's, it's a $100 tablet, so don't expect amazing specs when I read some of these off to you. It is, a 800 megahertz or a 1 gigahertz CPU. You got two different types there. 1500 or 1800 milliamp battery. Now, it comes with a either what they call a Pixel QI or standard LCD display. 512 megabytes of RAM, 4 gigabytes of storage, USB, and USB on the go ports. I'm thinking USB is a micro USB. The USB on the go is probably a host full-size USB port. I mean, you know, it's not pretty. It's not small. It looks like it could take a beating. You can get it with either straw. I think it's called Strawberry, which is a custom Linux distro put out by OLPC, or you can get it with
that
Android.
Is correct.
I think the Strawberry OS is kind of cool, the way that it simplifies Linux, and it's, you know, I mean, it's open source, so I mean it's cheap, you know, adds a little bit to, and that's why they're able to put Android on this too, is because Android, since it's open source, it's cheap to put on a tablet.
Mm-hmm. And actually the advantage with Android is the power optimization. The fact is that even the custom Linux distributions are not quite optimized for the cell phone processors that are being thrown on these tablets. They're working on it, but even major distributions haven't yet fully adopted it yet. Android, well, was built for it, so you'll see generally better power management with Android.
Yeah, and this actually, for some people, I'm sure they're saying, well, if you're in a third world country, how are you going to charge a tablet? Power outlets just aren't everywhere. Well, they got you covered, because this one can be charged via a hand crank that has a 10-to-1 ratio, meaning you'll get 10 minutes of usage out of every 1 minute of cranking, or by the optional 4-watt solar panel cover that covers the screen. You can actually take it off and plug it in, to where the whole thing can be powered just by leaving it out in the sun. So that's pretty cool. For $100, this actually probably wouldn't be that horrible of a thing just to buy and have around the house, to tell you the truth, just to play with it.
And I actually plan on, it appears that it charges via a DC jack. However, I do plan on picking up that solar charger, because that would make it one of the fastest solar chargers on the market, ironically enough. And adapting it, splicing a micro USB port for charging on there, because chances are the accessories for this can't be that expensive. So I would assume that, you know, if you needed a replacement solar panel, it's going to run a very cheap range.
You would think, simply because the whole kit and caboodle costs $100.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah, and I guess if I ever felt like losing a little weight, I would get the hand crank and you know, adapt it over. But I don't see myself ever doing that.
Yeah,
it's a nice feature.
And I mean, to be clear on this, when they say $100, really it depends on the configuration that you pick, and also the fact of these are not. You're not going to go to Best Buy and pick one of these up. These are made for bulk orders, you know. So missions and missionaries who go overseas or anything like that, who have a classroom and teach, they can order a whole bunch of them for all their students. And, you know, they might be able to get it to $100 depending on size of your order and configuration.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This one excites me. I am the owner of a Nexus S 4G on Sprint's network. It's a fantastic phone, pure Android and pure loving it. Now, when the Galaxy Nexus came out, I was very bummed to see that it went straight to Verizon. I really wanted another pure Google phone. Well, Sprint has decided to let the cat out of the bag, and for their new 4G LTE network that they're going to be putting out all across, I believe it's Texas, pretty much, is right now. The big cities in Texas,
yes.
Such as Dallas, Atlanta, Houston, San Antonio. Atlanta's in Georgia, obviously. But you know.
I was wondering if you were going to catch that.
Yeah. But the other three are all Texas. Yeah, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio. Now, see, that's kind of funny, because if you read the press release, it literally says Dallas, Atlanta, Houston, San Antonio. Why would they not put all the Texas cities next to each other?
I'm not sure.
Anyway,
there's definitely no rhyme or reason to that one.
Yeah, I digress. They have announced that with their new 4G LTE network, the Galaxy Nexus will be coming to Sprint. So it will be arriving on our little Android-laden doorsteps, and I am uber excited about that. Some of the other phones that are going to be coming out are the LG Viper. I haven't really seen a whole lot about that phone yet. I don't know. Have you read anything about that one yet?
Yes. Give me one second. Scrolling. Thanks, Internet Explorer, for being so useless.
Yeah, Chrome on Mac is a little bit slow tonight as well, and that's killing me.
Well, I'm also Skyping on a tethered connection, so yeah. I guess I can't really complain too much.
Sprint doesn't need to know that.
Hey, I pay for it.
Oh, wow.
It's part of my plan. No, it's an employee plan, so I'm not really paying for it. But
odd people out. But the Galaxy Nexus will be coming. It also, an announcement also on the side, Galaxy Nexus on Sprint will be getting Google Wallet, which is something the Verizon one does not have quite yet.
And I guess I lied.
It's weird that, like, for instance, all the Nexus S phones on all the other networks don't have Wallet, but the one on Sprint does. So I'm really liking the fact that Sprint has something that no one else has on their phone. It's kind of cool.
Well,
now you don't really. I use Google Wallet once. So.
By the way, I found the LG Viber. Oh, I already had the tab open. I'm just an idiot.
I see.
All right, it's a pretty much a stock midline smartphone. It's coming with 2.3, and it's a 4-inch WVGA touchscreen, so it is not top of the line. 1.2 gigahertz dual core, 5-megapixel camera, front-facing VGA, but it does come with near-field communication and Google Wallet.
Huh, wow.
So it's like LG decided to keep the hardware basic and really pack in the software features.
That's what it sounds like, because this is another phone that gets Google Wallet. That's impressive. I like
that. And for LG, that's a great strategy, because they have been struggling to compete with Samsung and HTC in regards to who's got the bigger muscle behind the phone. And focusing on services is definitely a good way to go for them.
Awesome. All right. For those of you who know me, and you know, everybody knows me, I live in public. What can I do? Anyway, for anyone who's ever heard me talk on previous podcasts, either the 8 Days of Geek podcast or any others, you'll know that I fancy myself one step below an amateur photographer. Some people would say I'm higher. I disagree. No, there is no harder critic than ourselves. However, I am and just absolutely smitten with camera porn. I have to have as many new cameras on my screen as I possibly can, and I've got to see specs. I want spec sheets. I want pictures. I want video samples. I love it. I eat it up. Well, Nikon has debuted its new flagship DSLR. It's called the D4. And let me tell you, this thing is... I mean, to be completely honest, it's a photographer's wet dream. There's no other way of putting it. It's a pretty impressive piece of hardware. It is, let's see here. The spec sheet itself is just pretty ridiculous. For instance, 51 individual focus points. Normal cameras have somewhere in the area of 36 or so. It could shoot 1080p video at either 24 or 30 frames per second. 720p video at 60 frames per second. That's pretty nice, because that even opens the door for just a little bit of a slow-mo aspect, because normal video for like movies and stuff is shot at 24 frames per second. That gives you a little bit more oomph, a little more breathing room. The megapixels on this sucker are pretty impressive. It's 16.2 megapixels. It's a full-size CMOS sensor, so you get all the quality you possibly can, which also means it is a big camera. I mean, just physically, it's pretty huge. So, it's... Well, for instance, ISO. All right, this is the sensitivity of your camera's sensor to light. The higher the number, the more sensitive it is to light, so it lightens pictures in a dark room. You can take a picture in a dark room. If you crank your ISO up, the picture will get lighter and lighter every step you go up. However, it does get a little noisier. Now, for instance, my camera, I believe, goes to 64,000 or something like that as the ISO number. Never shot a photo at that setting, but I know it goes that high. This one literally goes to 204,800 ISO rating. That is redonkulous. I mean, you could take a picture of the event horizon of a black hole with this thing and get something out of it. You know, I mean, they need to just strap this to the Hubble and let it go. I mean, this blows everything out of the water. However, the camera does cost, I believe, somewhere in the $7,000 range for the body by itself. No lens, no nothing, body.
Wow.
So, needless to say, I'm not going to be buying one of those anytime within my next three lifetimes. But it's cool. Nonetheless, right? Right. Right. Of course. Of course I'm right. I'm a camera
man. You're the camera guy. I'm the computer guy.
Yeah. So if you want to go drool over an amazing camera that I'll never be able to afford, and if you can afford it, send me some photos of you holding your camera. That's all I want.
And remember, when you're doing that, it's like porn to him.
It is. So put on a Randy face. So this camera is pretty amazing. If you want to go check it out, it's on Nikon's website. We also have a Mashable link in the show notes. You can go check out some photos of it. My kind of photos: front, back, side, upper left, upper right, you know, underneath, through the lens, all these great things. It's like 10 photos of pure gorgeousness. So go check that out and enjoy it. Now, I'm not 100% on Windows 8 quite yet, but I know some people are quite impressed with it. It is going to be coming out on tablets this year. They have a developer preview tablet at CES that I looked at. It's the same one that we reported on a few months ago when Windows 8 beta came out. We've got a new one that has come out. Has been announced. It's from Lenovo. It's called the Yoga. Not 100% kosher on the name. I understand the name. But I'm not 100% okay with it. Kind of like I wasn't 100% okay with the iPad. So we'll see. It might grow on me. This is actually your story, Sam. So I'm going to let you go ahead and take this one and tell us a little bit about the Lenovo Yoga.
Okay. Well, a quick explanation on its name. The reason it's called the Yoga is because it is the first tablet laptop to completely bend over backwards instead of having like a swivel, like certain of the older, what do they call those? Well, I guess that's what tablets were called before they were tablets.
I think they just called them a slate PC or something.
Right. It completely bends over backwards and the keyboard shuts off so that it is just a touchscreen tablet. Hardware-wise, it is a 13.3-inch screen, touchscreen, that is fully 10-point multi-touch compatible. So if you are, say, using a piano app, all 10 of your fingers can register on a key of the piano.
Hmm.
That's actually a very impressive technology to have for a tablet. Most of them have it. The support isn't always there, and it's not always accurate. So if they pull that off,
that'll
be really good for Windows.
I think that's where Windows 8 is going to come in handy on this thing, is going to be able to enable that 10-point multi-touch.
Mm-hmm. And already have a lot of programs built for it that can use it.
Exactly. Now, I'm seeing that this thing has up to 8 hours of battery life. For its size, that's pretty impressive. Yep. I mean, it's a pretty thin piece of equipment, so it does not have a lot of room for a battery. But you know, you'd like to see a little more come out of it. I think the big problem is that it has it's going to be basically a full-on computer, so it will have a regular processor in it, which takes a little bit more oomph to run.
Right. For those of you who have been following Intel's push with the Ultrabooks, it is technically a full Ultrabook. It hits all the specs necessary to be considered a top-of-the-line laptop, which is why, 8 hours. And it's actually one of the best in regards to battery life for an Ultrabook. Now, for a tablet, it is horrible. I get up to 2 days, sometimes more, out of my touchpad with regular use. Nothing, you know, just Wi-Fi. Don't have any data card in it. So it's pretty bad for a tablet, but amazing for a laptop.
Yeah, and I get...
Or for the Ultrabooks.
I get roughly somewhere around 2 days, probably 1.5 days, give or take, on my usage on my Nook Color that is rooted and CyanEngine mod installed. Mm-hmm. So, and I leave the Wi-Fi on, so...
Yeah, I got nearly 2 weeks out of the touchpad when I lost it in a box whenever I moved.
There you go, folks. It was still on. If you want to increase your battery life, you lose your gadgets in a box. You'll get increased battery life.
Actually a very sad 2 weeks.
The one big thing that worries me about this entire package is that this is going to be it's going to be both a laptop and a slate, which for a laptop this part is not bad. For a slate, this isn't really good. It's going to weigh 3.1 pounds.
Yes.
That's going to be a little rough on the hands.
Right. The big thing with it is that it is still intended for you to sit down and type with the keyboard. Or what's nice is that whenever you do have it flip backwards, you can actually use the flip back keyboard as a stand and use it as a vertical touchscreen device, to where you're actually holding your hands up and typing as if you would be on a normal screen. So it is really intended for you to find a nice little coffee table and sit down and use it, not so much for you to be standing at a press conference typing on it insanely fast like you would be able to, say, with any of the new Samsung tablets, and not feel that weight against your arm.
Yeah, so this is not necessarily a toilet reader.
No.
That's what I've always called the iPad, is that it's fantastic to use reading on the toilet.
Dude, I am absolutely afraid of taking my touchpad into the bathroom.
Oh, not
me.
I got to take at least one electronic gizmo on the toilet. You know, most of my Twitter updates come from the toilet, by the way. Just so you know.
I think most people's Twitter updates come from the toilet. I don't think there's anyone that I follow that hasn't said that at least once.
Well, it's about the only free time I get to update Twitter is when I'm sitting on the toilet. Well,
hey, better than doing it behind the wheel of a vehicle.
This is true.
Perfectly fine with that.
This is true.
By the way, one other thing about it is that it does have the 1600 by 900. So it's a standard 4.3. When it comes to multi-device compatibility, when you're looking at a phone, when you're looking at a tablet or a computer, and you're wanting one operating system across all of them, the fact is a 16.9 is the way to go.
Yes, 16.9 for your resolution is really great. And, I mean, you know, it's a good screen ratio. So
right. It definitely allows... For those app developers out there that are interested in getting into Windows 8 or maybe one day, that means that you could have one app.
Sorry, folks. We keep losing Sam. He is on a iffy connection, we'll say. Maybe he should get Viasat. Dun, dun, dun. I think we probably lost him for good. We might have. I'll just cover a few things real quick on the Lenovo Yoga. I'll wrap it up here. The Yoga is expected to hit the market on the second half of 2012, and it's going to be with an estimated starting price. And, you know, this will be, you can imagine, it'll be reconfigurable. It'll have an estimated starting price of about $1,200. A little bit pricey, but it is a full computer. So that's what you got to keep telling yourself, is this a full computer first and a slate second. So, on our next story, and I'm going to let Sam cover this one, we are going to hear a little bit more about Nokia. So let's go ahead and hear some about that brand new, that there Nokia phone, Sam.
Okay, and this is the... all right, I'm a Windows fan. As much as I hate to say that, actually enjoy... Oh, I know, it's almost like, yeah, there's a lot of problems and everything else like that. But they've always done a really good job in at least keeping developers and customer service high. Yes, they shouldn't need that customer service. I mean, but they're not Apple, so you have to forgive them every once in a while.
You do.
But we are talking about the Lumia 900, the long speculated, long as in like a week, but Windows Phone 7 flagship device from Nokia coming to AT&T. The thing is a beast. It is the easily the most powerful Windows Phone to be announced or to be coming, equally beating out like the Titan 2 that HTC is going to be talking about. But it's a 4.3-inch AMOLED clear black display, which if you have ever seen any of Nokia's clear black displays, they are some of the best-looking displays on the market. Easily they have the darkest blacks and the clearest blacks of anything. So when it comes to reading on the device, second to none. The battery, 1830 milliamps. That is about on par with where most phones are today. And with Windows Phone, they don't often have bad battery life. But what worries me is the fact that it is an LTE phone. And LTE with Windows Phone, not proven, a little bit worried about how the battery life is going to be with that.
Gotcha.
And it's just a 1.4 gigahertz processor. Front-facing camera. And it does come with the Carl Zeiss optics with the 8-megapixel rear, which has been Nokia standard for about 2 years now. Takes beautiful pictures.
Yeah, isn't...
And half a gigahertz.
I can never remember. Is it Sony or is it Nokia that owns the Carl Zeiss name? I think it's
Nokia.
Is it Nokia?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is Nokia.
Zeiss optics are some of the best optics in the world. As far as anything is concerned, cameras, binoculars, you know, cell phone cameras, all these things. So having a Carl Zeiss lens on your phone means you will get really pretty good pictures as long as the phone's processor and camera module can handle it.
Mm-hmm. Right. What makes me a little sad is the fact that it's 8 megapixel. The fact is 2 years ago, the Nokia N900 was announced with the exact same setup. And before that, since then, we've seen the N900, we've seen the N9, and we've seen the N8. And all of those were that 8 megapixel camera. I would really like to see a jump to 10 or 12 within the next few years.
So let me ask you this. Do you think as a cell phone user, do you think we need a camera that's more than 8 megapixels on a cell phone?
2 years ago, I would have said no, since the majority for a standard photo, you were looking at roughly between 5 and 7 megapixels on a standard photo. The thing is nowadays, all of your photos are getting up.
And I think we might have lost Sam again. It's very possible. It happens. What can you do? Anyway, what he was about to say, I'm sure, is that most standard photos don't need... I mean, if you're going to be taking photos for, we'll say, you know, 4x6s. 4x6s, you can get away with a 6-megapixel camera and really not lose any big, any kind of, you know, resolution. It's not going to blur out on you. Things, you know, if you jump up to an 8-megapixel, you're talking about like an 8x10 would be able to be shot and with no, you know, resolution loss. And you go up from there. But honestly, how many times have people that you know shot photos with their cell phones and printed them out? I can't think of any times that that's happened. Plus, you've got to figure that even the people who are printing them out, I mean, I understand. A lot of times I go to the zoo and I notice that people are using their cell phone cameras as their primary camera. I mean, I get that. It's in your pocket. It's available. The best camera you can use is the one you always have on you. But I just, with no main controls, no telephoto, no nothing like that, I just don't see why, you know, personally, I don't see why I need anything more than a good snapshot. You know, maybe I need to print a 4x6 or a 5x7, I really don't think I'm going to print an 8x10 from my cell phone. But why do you think we need more hopped up cameras, more megapixels?
Two reasons. One, actually, in regards to people I know who have done it, for some reason or another, I found myself hanging around in the photo department of the local Walmart for a while, and you'd be amazed at the amount of teenage girls who come in who are doing scrapbooking or something else like that, that print off a variety of photo sizes, up to and including poster size pictures from their cell phones. Right. You know, they're actually hooking it into the machines that Walmart has and setting for print logs off of their cell phone. And thankfully, most of them appear to be doing it from high-end Android devices, so you know the camera's good on them. But I don't think they realize, because the megapixel, no one really knows what megapixels equates out to. That's not taught in school. No, unless you're a tech geek like us, it doesn't mean anything. So I don't think any of them realize why their pictures aren't as clear as they should be at those larger sizes. Obviously, that's a salesman thing to pitch that, you know, to their customers when they're coming in for the cell phone. Exactly. Like, hey, if you like to print these pictures off. The other thing is how often we're viewing digital media now, and how much, you know, we have 10-inch tablets. We have, heck, 22 to 50-inch computer monitors, you know, or TVs that we're using. And the resolution of the picture when it's shot plays a huge role in how it looks on a 50-inch monitor.
That's very
or how it can look on a 50-inch monitor.
Hmm. Well, you know, I guess technology moves on. I'm sure we'll have 20, 30 megapixel digital cameras on our cell phones in minor years.
I've no doubt. And I would expect that cell phones will be pushing the camera technology. We'll see that within the next 2 to 3 years. Really forcing the low-end cameras that you can go anywhere, Walmart, Best Buy, and just pick up to really increase their features and their usability to compete with cell phones and the price point. If you're already spending $200 on an iPhone, then your $100 camera better be 2 to 3 times as good as that camera on that iPhone.
Exactly.
And eventually, the convenience factor of the cell phone, I think, will win.
Yeah, and the iPhone takes amazing photos for being a phone, you know.
And you have tons of apps to really do a lot with those photos.
Exactly. It's pretty impressive, the kind of photos that a phone can take nowadays. The Nexus S takes a really great photo. You know, I have other camera gear that I keep with me all the time, so I don't use my cell phone camera for anything but taking notes or capturing a moment that I just absolutely cannot get with any other camera. So 8 megapixels is fine for me. However, like I said, people who are at the zoo using these as their number one main camera or their only camera, I can see where they might need to jump up to 12. You know, with 12 you can get a pretty decent poster size print out of a 12 megapixel camera. So, all right. Well, that's all we have for this episode. Like I said in the last episode, some of these might every once in a while run a little long. This one did. We ran to about 40 minutes instead of our allotted 30. But it is CES, and geeks rejoice. Yay! It's CES. So next week we'll have a whole lot of new products for you to sink your eyes into and gaze upon with your teeth. So, Sam, I guess, do you want to say goodbye? You got to tell people where they can find you, because if they can't find you, how are they going to know all those beautiful, wonderful things that you say about me? Silence! Ha ha!
Why? I fixed it real quick.
And that couldn't have been at a better time either, because here I am saying how much you talk me up and you're saying all these great things about me, and then I get nothing but dead silence. It was perfect.
Oh,
it's awesome. That's like when Brandon forgets to unmute his microphone. All right, go ahead and tell the people.
What's that?
Go ahead and tell everyone where they can find and follow you.
Okay. You can find me here at the 8 Days of Geek. Sam Briggs at 8daysofgeek.com is the email here. You can find me on Twitter as the Manatee Man. Let's see here. Do we still do the forums here?
We do. A little bit.
You can find me here on the forums. Also as the Manatee Man. Pretty much just do a search for Manatee Man wherever you go, and you should find me.
Find the Manatee Man. I am the walrus. all right. For me, you can catch me on email. That's Jesse at 8daysofgeek.com. Of course, you can go to my Twitter account. That's at Pen of Doom. You can find me on about.me. That's about.me/Jesse Miller. That's JesseMiller. If you'd like to send us a text message or call us and leave us a voicemail, the number you can reach us at is 754-273-6397. And for those of you who have CES on the brain and are not listening to a word that I'm saying, that number was 754-273-6397. That's pretty much it. That's all we got for tonight. We've gone a little over. Giving you 10 extra minutes for no extra charge, which we're not charging in the first place, so don't complain. Well, join us next week for a recap of CES and all the goodies that the developers have decided to release unto the masses. And enjoy the show, you know? Give us a call, send us a text, and let us know what you think. All right, Sam, you want to say goodbye to the good geeks out there?
Good night, everyone. Have a great week, and you'll hear from me next week.
And may the flight of angels sing thee to thy rest.
Okay.